Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin. How are you feeling?
I'm doing 99% better.
I want to give a special shout out to a friend of the program, Austin.
What's up, Austin? Tonight's case is Rodney Reed and the murder of Stacy Stites. I'm just going to go ahead and give a disclaimer. You all know you're listening to The Generation Y, and we do not follow narratives. We do not go with any sort of side. We go with the evidence presented to us.
Stacy Stites was 19 years old, and she was engaged to a police officer by the name of Jimmy Fennell. When her body was discovered on the side of a road, I'm sure the first person they looked at was Jimmy Fennell.
And it was. He was interrogated multiple times.
But fast forward about 12 or 13 months, and a man by the name of Rodney Reed is arrested because of DNA testing. And DNA testing confirmed that his DNA was inside the victim, Stacy Stites. When he was first asked about Stacy, he denied knowing her. He had been picked up on a drug charge. He was convicted of the murder of Stacy Stites, but it had come out that he had been carrying on a secret relationship with her, which throws everything into question. So if the two were having a secret relationship, then that could explain away his DNA being found inside of her body.
Exactly.
So now we need to take this back to the beginning. Stacy Stites was 19 years old. She worked at HEB Grocery, and she was engaged to a police officer by the name of Jimmy Fennell. They lived in an apartment above the apartment where her mother lived, who was Carol Stites. On the morning of April 23rd, 1996, in Bastrop County, Texas, which is nearby Austin, Texas, Stacy had left for work, we believe, somewhere between 2:45 and 3 in the morning, because her shift started at 3:30 in the morning.
She was about 30 miles from work. But at 3 in the morning, there's not a lot of traffic.
According to her fiance, Jimmy Fennell, Stacy didn't really like taking the road she took to work, so she didn't even eat breakfast. She didn't want to have to stop along the way at all. She just wanted to drive straight to work.
It's kind of a, according to her, creepy back road.
Now at 5:15 that morning, Her plates are called in.
A Bastrop police officer sees a pickup truck parked in a parking lot of a school and calls in the plates and comes back as Jimmy's truck.
Yeah, it's at the Bastrop High School. This is a truck that was not reported stolen. The truck belongs to her fiance.
Now, she doesn't show up to work. Her employer is looking for her and calls her mother, who in turn calls Jimmy, wondering if she had stayed in from work.
And according to Carol, when she called Jimmy, she had woken him up out of his sleep. She could tell that he had been asleep. And so he borrowed her keys so that he could go looking for Stacy.
And he calls in an APB on his own truck and finds out that it's already been recovered or found.
Now, it doesn't seem like much happened until just before 3 p.m. in the afternoon of the 23rd, when someone who was picking wildflowers discovered a body. And that body turned out to be Stacy Stites.
She was found laying on her back with her hands above her head. Her clothes were in somewhat disarray, but she did have clothes on and her shirt was thrown off. Her name tag was placed between her knees. It's kind of an odd placement, but it appears that she was dragged there and then placed there.
And her zipper had been broken, but her pants had been pulled up. The investigators will get in trouble for this later on, at least with the public, because they make some decisions that don't seem correct. One of the things they do is they cover her body with a blanket because there's already a helicopter flying overhead. News reporters are showing up. They also end up removing her clothing at the scene.
They don't lock down the scene. So all the footprints are pretty much from officers' boots. That's not the best. They need to declare the crime scene.
They don't check the temperature of her body at the scene. And this is important because if you can check the body temperature, you can do some calculations and figure out about the time the person died.
Yeah. Also, there's other ways to find time of death, such as eye fluid. So none of this is done.
It's also alleged that crime scene investigators did not change their gloves when handling different pieces of evidence.
So we have transfer of DNA, transfer of anything. This crime scene is now tainted. Initially, they think, well, the boyfriend, the husband, that's always the prime suspect, right?
Right. And her fiance lived with her. And according to what everyone thought, well, he was the last one to see her alive.
So they bring him in for interrogation. They give him polygraph tests, and he shows deception when questioned about the murder of Stacy. So I guess you could say he failed the polygraphs.
But we don't put a lot of stock in polygraph tests, do we, Justin?
I don't, but other people seem to think that it's one more piece of the puzzle. I think that it's all up to an interpretation.
What did Jimmy say about his activities the evening before?
He said that Stacy came home and they took a shower. They hung out for a bit.
Yeah, I believe he said something about giving her a back rub.
Yeah, yeah. And then they went to bed, but he went out to the couch to watch TV because she has to get up early in the morning to go to work. According to him, he goes to sleep, or he falls asleep, but she normally leaves at around 3 a.m. So he says she went to work at 3, but he doesn't really know because he was asleep. But he definitely says he was with her up until a certain point in the night.
So investigators still believe that he was the last one to see her alive, but he says that she left the house to go to work.
Now, what does Stacy's mother say? She lives right below them, right?
Carol Stites testified that at about 3 a.m., her daughter's door opened and shut, and one person went down the stairs. From her point of view, one person left that apartment at 3 a.m.
The investigators are looking into Jimmy, they're not really getting any traction because they have DNA from Stacy that doesn't match Jimmy. We have one person who claims that Jimmy had gone drinking at the bar that night. And this witness came out much later. So bar patrons or the bartender questioned whether or not Jimmy was at this bar. No, it didn't happen. I'm sure Jimmy would be pretty upset if he found out that Stacy was having an affair. A previous officer says that Jimmy says if he ever found his significant other cheating on him, he would have to strangle them with a belt. But again, this is a guy that comes forward years later. He didn't report this at the time. So is this somebody that's trying to slander Jimmy, or is this real? We have witnesses that say Stacy was afraid of Jimmy, that she was skittish around him or would hide from him when he would go visit her at work. But here we have a woman who's working overtime to pay for a wedding with this man. But they're still questioning him because that's what they do. It's not like they just give up. So they went hard on him initially, but they just couldn't come up with anything because the truck, well, it was his truck. So his fingerprints, his DNA are going to be on that truck. Her body, well, they don't really find his DNA there, but it would make sense if there was, because he said he gave her a back rub that night, but they don't. So we're looking at this and thinking, well, it's really hard to tell when you live with somebody if that person murdered you, because all of their stuff, all of their things, all of their DNA is going to be everywhere. So is that suspicious? Really, it isn't. But if they do suspect Jimmy as the prime suspect, they do not check her apartment or search it. You'd think that they would search the apartment. You would think that they would have, I don't know, just done a little bit more. When asked why they didn't search Jimmy's apartment, the investigator said he had no probable cause. I see police officers find probable cause for searching cars, but yet they can't find probable cause to search an apartment of a suspected murderer. Okay, we'll go with that.
Again, you wonder if his being a police officer had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Another thing they observed was it appeared that her fingernails might have been clipped off, as if somebody was trying to get rid of evidence, as if she was defending herself, scratching. The truck had signs of at least Stacy's death. There was mucus discharge on the hump and kind of on the seat. Fast forward a little bit, defense attorneys will say that this is part of rigor mortis. This is part of death, and you have to be dead for 5 hours at least before this purge would happen. So they're putting that time frame on there. She also showed signs of lividity, which, as we know from other popular cases, that usually takes at least 5 to 6 hours also. There is some wiggle room on lividity. Her belt had been removed and broken in half, and a piece of her belt was found next to her body. So we can assume, because of a ligature mark across her neck, that this was strangulation, or at least that's what the medical examiner says.
Yeah, they said that the features of the belt were found on her neck, essentially. It was a dark woven belt.
Yeah. But one more black eye for this investigation is they photographed her on the side of the road at the crime scene. And then when she's at the morgue, there's additional marks on her body. It looks like cigarette burns that weren't on her body at the crime scene. That's screwed up. What are they doing here?
We should talk more about the so-called fingernail clipping. Did you have a chance to look at the images of her fingers, Justin?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think when you looked at it? Because I know I felt a certain way looking at her fingers, but what did you think?
I couldn't tell if they were clipped or not. They looked short, but the witnesses that will say they were ragged and clipped, I can't confirm that with my own eyes. I just thought they looked very short, which is a little odd. But if you're a working person, well, you don't have time for that.
Most of you clip your fingernails. I know when I do, they don't look ragged. And her fingernails did look ragged. But you only get ragged fingernails, I think, if you chew on them. So we've pointed out how many things have gone wrong with the investigation to start with. An additional item that we have to go over, though, is the truck. And we've talked about some of what they discovered in the truck. Another thing that they found was caramel popcorn.
And it was in her teeth and in this discharge that they found.
Yeah, we do believe it was in the teeth. This is from additional investigation, people looking at the photographs of her, and it appeared as if she had been eating this caramelized popcorn, which, you know, that makes sense.
She doesn't stop for breakfast, so she needs a snack.
Apparently, they go over the truck, they process it, and then within, what, 4 or 5 days, they turn the truck back over to Jimmy Fennell.
Who sells it. Actually, I think he had the title signed over before it was even returned to him.
Absolutely. According to the title, he had already signed that over within a day.
That's not looking good for him.
And then the truck was turned over to a dealership for another vehicle.
Yeah. And why they would give the vehicle back so quickly to, at the time, who they considered the prime suspect.
Yeah, I think it's more who they're giving the truck to rather than how long it took to process the truck that bothers me. Because if he really was a suspect, I mean, I don't care that they went through and checked taxi records, that they checked all of the police vehicles' mileage and where those vehicles had been, to figure out whether he could have transported her and then been picked up by either a cab or another officer. Even though that doesn't pan out for the investigation, according to them, it still doesn't make sense if you've got your only suspect to give him back the vehicle that her body had been transported in and that maybe she had even been murdered in.
It's literally the crime scene and they just gave it up.
Highly suspicious, and I don't know if this is because he's a police officer. I don't know if that factored in.
There's going to be a lot of conspiracy points that is very easy to connect the dots here, but is it valid? I don't know, but this looks really bad. So Jimmy is not arrested. He's not indicted. They kind of drop it on him, and when the lead investigator, who's a Texas Ranger, Wardlow, is questioned why he didn't pursue Jimmy. He said for logistical reasons. But I don't even really know what that means at this point. I thought I did when I first heard it, but now, not so much.
I think it means buzz off.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But things will change because there's a man who's picked up on drug charges. And his name is Rodney Reed. In order to try and get a new suspect, or maybe to refocus on Jimmy Fennell if necessary, they have the DNA from the crime tested against other suspects. And they get a match. And that match is to a man in his late 20s known as Rodney Reed. Rodney Reed is picked up on some drug charges, cocaine. He is interviewed, and they don't ask him about the drugs. They ask him about Stacy Stites. And Rodney Reed will say that he doesn't know anything about that person, but he had read of her murder.
So right off the bat, he's not being very upfront.
But this really gets the attention of investigators because his DNA is inside of her.
Yeah. And they know it's his DNA because of other sexual assaults where they had collected his DNA. Really not painting a good picture right here.
So you could see how investigators at the time are looking at this and saying, well, we've had other rape victims in the past and, you know, of Rodney Reed's, And now we have a dead woman who has his DNA inside of her. She must have been his victim.
Not only DNA inside of her, but they also have saliva on her chest.
Yes, they used swabs during the autopsy, and they were able to collect DNA from her chest and from inside of her. All of it were perfect matches for Rodney Reed. As perfect as DNA gets, it seems, because it excluded Jimmy Finnell.
Exactly. Kind of a slam dunk investigation and case here now towards Rodney.
They can take him to court.
Yeah. Now, he has a bond hearing where Rodney's mother will actually come in and testify that he had a relationship with Stacy.
This is Sandra Reed.
Yeah. This is pretty much the only time that Rodney has a witness who's able to come into court and testify on his behalf. Really to let the courts know he had a relationship with Stacy. He had a background with her.
And that would be possibly an alibi.
Or at least an explanation of why his DNA is on her. He will say that he had seen Stacy on the night of the 21st and into the 22nd, and they would have sex. So that explains why his DNA is there. Now, the initial autopsy reports and investigation says that her underwear was still fresh, meaning that it was freshly deposited there and not from a day before. They also said that there were whole spermatozoa inside of her. And the prosecution, of course, will say that that wouldn't have happened if it was a couple days later. Now, that can stay in your body for up to 72 hours or longer, pretty much a week. So their argument is going against science. But if it was fresh, that's really not looking good for Rodney, because Stacy probably would have showered or changed clothes or something a day later. But they're saying that this is fresh. This is freshly deposited. So it had to have been Rodney.
Well, this is to back up their version of events. And if they want to convict Rodney Reed, they realize it's going to take more than just the DNA. They need to shape the narrative so that people believe that Stacy Stites was raped and murdered all at once. It wasn't he had sex with her a couple days before and then her body was found later. That's a lot of time to go by. But as Justin said, the spermatozoa can stay in the body for days.
Yeah, you literally in court, it's an argument. You could say pigs fly, and whether the prosecutor or the defense makes the better argument, now pigs can actually fly in the court of law. It doesn't matter if it's scientifically correct at all. And if anyone's upset with that statement, sorry, it's true. We see it all the time. I've covered enough cases where they will say one and one is three, and they made a better argument, and now the jury has to literally decide based off that better argument. So, go figure.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or, what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Before we get to the trial, I do want to say that there were some other suspects that would pop up, but I didn't take them too seriously because they weren't based on real evidence. They were just suspects because of who they were. It would be like any other case where perhaps you had a child taken and anyone who had been a pedophile or suspected of that. And in this case, there were a couple of other men that were looked at in this case. Just, it didn't seem like there was much to support it, and they were dropped as suspects. And again, having the DNA tests confirming that Rodney Reed had possibly raped Stacy, that's pretty damning. So the prosecution's pretty confident going into court. This is where I think you have a large number of people coming down on Reed's side. And it's because if you look over a court trial and you have what appears to be an unfair contest, it just doesn't sit well with people. We know about too many cases where people have been screwed over in court, and it just doesn't sit right with anyone. And in this case, in this trial, we have someone who basically didn't have much of a defense.
Well, he got two court-appointed attorneys 2 months before the trial started. Not a lot of time to prepare, and we don't know what their caseload was either. I know they weren't just working on Rodney's case. You would think that he has to prove that he had a relationship with Stacy. Otherwise, this is a stranger danger. He intercepted her on the way to work. He didn't know her. Therefore, it's absolutely him. But besides his mother coming in and testifying that they had a relationship, he had a lot of family members, including family members on Stacy's side, that wanted to testify for him or on his behalf, saying, yes, they had a relationship. They did know each other. But none of them get to, called in for court.
It is said by the defense attorneys that they were told that these defense witnesses would not pan out, that if they bothered bringing him in, they would turn on them and basically embarrass them in court by stating that they didn't have any such information that Stacy and Rodney had had a relationship.
But in their opening statements, they say, we're going to prove that they had a prior relationship, and then nothing. So I realize that things are fluid in a court of law, but this was pretty pivotal to Rodney's defense, and it was completely dropped. So now we can't prove that he had any history with this woman, and she ends up dead with his DNA on her. It's open and shut case right there.
And they looked into Jimmy Finnell, who, aside from the polygraphs and selling his truck rather quickly, there's nothing really there, right? Other than he had a connection with the victim. And so you can imagine going through the trial that they're left with a woman who was raped and murdered, left on the side of a road. She had obviously suffered. And you have this man who had left his DNA in and on her, and he's in court. He's on trial. It seems pretty open and shut.
Yeah, and make matters worse, this is a Texas town, white cop, white fiance, all white jury, and a black man. You want to factor that into Rodney's luck? It's not turning out too well. prosecution will also bring in 5 witnesses to testify against Rodney. All had past relationships or incidents with Rodney where they accuse him of sexual assault. We have Rodney with a very questionable past, his DNA on the victim, conflicts in his statement, him saying that they were together the day before, him saying that he doesn't know her. And it's not real hard for the jury to find him guilty. And this is Texas, where they hand out the death penalty like Pez.
These other women who have accused him of assaulting them, this was definitely used in the punishment phase after he had been found guilty. They end up hitting him with the death penalty. And as Justin said, in Texas, this is not uncommon. Rodney Reed had been indicted for rape and attempted rape a number of times. I believe it was 5 times. Not all of these would stick, but I believe that there are several that remain. And one of the victims was a woman who he had been in a relationship with, and she had claimed that he had raped her. The second one was 12 years old at the time, and she was sleeping on her couch and woke up to find herself blindfolded and gagged. And she said she was being hit in the head by someone, and then she was raped. We could go through all these, but essentially in each of these cases, there are rape kits done and DNA is taken.
And that's how they tied Rodney to Stacy. So they had a DNA match between these cases.
Now, it needs to be said, the trial resulted in a guilty verdict and the death penalty. So they're not going to bring forth these indictments into court because, well, they already have the person responsible put away and he's not getting out, according to them. So that's why there hasn't been more movement on these indictments.
Yeah, I think the prosecution is holding these in their back pocket. So if Rodney were to ever get free, they would have additional charges they could hit him with. Now, I don't know how the statute of limitation goes there. One of the charges was dropped, but that was because the victim asked for the charges to be dismissed.
Yeah, and in that case, that was the mother of 2 of his children. And she had stated that she just didn't believe anything would really come of it anyway. We spoke about this quite a bit before we even started recording. In this case, it seems really pronounced how you have a number of women who have claimed to have been raped. And it seems as though there's this idea that nothing was ever really going to be done about this. And furthermore, you have people who are trying to help Rodney to be freed. And they're making a lot of statements that are what I would term victim blaming. And they basically say that these women were in relationship with Rodney and that they're just making it up.
Has he been charged in a court of law? No, he hasn't. But there is DNA linking him to these women, and it's their word. So after the trial, he is given all the documents that the prosecution had used. There's one sort of curious document when it comes to the DNA evidence. You know, of course, he found the DNA evidence of himself linked to the body. But at the crime scene, there was a beer can that was found. And the DNA found on that beer can matched Officer Ed Simula and Jimmy's partner, David Hall. So we have DNA from 2 police officers on a beer can close to the crime scene. That doesn't look real good. Again, if you're back to connecting the dots, this is a dot right here. Sometime later, Officer Simula would be found in his apartment. And he had taken his own life. It said when Ed was found, he had used his left hand to pull the trigger, but he was right-handed. And it is said that no gun residue was found on his left hand. Before he is found, he has taken out almost $600 from an ATM and has told family members that he's going to Louisiana with a woman. So he's talked about having future plans. He's withdrawn money, and then he's found dead. So his family feels this is very questionable.
Before this happened,
the investigator, Rocky Wardlow, he happened to be roommates with Ed also. All these guys know each other. Another dot in the conspiracy. There is wild speculation that he was murdered or that he had a hand in Stacy's murder or disposal of her body, and guilt had overtaken him. But this is all speculation. But Rodney's thinking, why is there a beer can with two cops' DNA on it? And I have to kind of agree with him. Were they there to help Jimmy, or were they drinking on the job? Because either one of those options isn't good. With any death penalty case, you get automatic appeals. So Rodney gets new legal representation and tries to get a different outcome.
Right. And working for him these days is a lawyer by the name of Bryce Benjet, and he works with the Innocence Project. And as we know, the Innocence Project will pretty much only take cases, it seems, if they believe in their client's innocence. This is their passion.
Doing good work out there.
Bryce Benjet has gone through all of the evidence, and the way he sees it, he should be able to help his client, because there are serious problems with not only the investigation, but with the timeline, with the narrative that the prosecution set forth at trial. And what this really boils down to, despite their not being very successful so far with their appeals, is a very good argument. We can look back at Rodney Reed's past and see violence. We can see rape. But with any case, you have to ask yourself, who did it and why? And in this case, that's a really big problem, because as much as Rodney Reed fits, it doesn't mean that he has to. What other suspects were there? Well, there was Jimmy Finnell. And he was the one that supposedly was the last to see the victim. He said that he was there that night with her. What's the timeline here? Justin, let's go over what they found in the truck with the victim and on her person.
Well, again, Jimmy says that she was home that night. He went out to the living room to watch television and fell asleep, and assumes that she got up and went to work around 3 a.m. Her mother downstairs testifies that she heard the door open and one set of footsteps leave the apartment. We're not exactly sure who left the apartment at 3 a.m., what time she left the apartment, really anything. It's a little fuzzy there. At least in the truck, again, we found the mucus, the discharge. We found the caramel popcorn. We find fingerprints from both Stacy and Jimmy, but we do not find any fingerprints from Rodney. The prosecution will say that Rodney wiped down his own prints, but didn't wipe up Jimmy or Stacy's. Prosecution's not the brightest.
Well, I do know that they did find prints that they couldn't recover.
Yeah.
But that happens all the time where prints are left, they're just smudged. They're smeared, and there's no real way to match them against anyone else's.
I guess I would have preferred the prosecution just not saying anyone wiped down any prints, because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of crime scenes where prints are not left, or no usable prints are left. Go back and listen to episode one. Wasn't a single usable print from the perpetrators of the crime left at the crime scene. It's possible, but when you're going through the prosecution's theory and tearing it apart, this is just one more point where they get it wrong.
But the timeline is important, because they're trying to say they know who committed the crime because they know the timeline. They know what happened and when.
So she leaves the house at 3 a.m. Let's just say 3:30. She's met up with Rodney and he's murdered her. Then he's dumped her truck by 5:15, or let's just say 5:10, because police officer didn't see anyone else at the truck. So we have 3:30 to 5:10. This is less than 2 hours that whoever murdered her has her in the vehicle and then has to transport or move her body somewhere else. Hour and 40 minutes, that's not a lot of time. According to the defense, this discharge, this purge, takes up to 5 hours to happen. Also, her body shows signs of lividity, that she was on her side or face down, and she's found face up in the ditch. This is a problem.
And let's not forget, if she was murdered around 3:30, then her body was dumped on the side of a road much earlier than 5:15. 5:15 is just when they found the truck. You know, you have to assume that she was dumped and then the truck was driven somewhere else. So the truck was actually dropped off sometime later because it was found some distance from where her body was left.
Yeah. So she would have had to have been dumped and then the truck had to have been driven to that school to be found. So we're looking at maybe an hour, a window here.
Her body showed signs of lividity. Again, it's breaking down a blood vessel, so the blood is pooling where gravity takes it. And where the lividity was on her body was on the top of her body, meaning when she was murdered and was left wherever she was murdered for a while, her blood was pooling into the top of her body. When she was dumped on the side of the road, she was left on her back. So it shows that she was face down for at least, I would say at least, what, 4 hours?
4 to 5 hours. And we think that she was left in the truck that way because of the discharge that would coincide with the lividity.
Yeah, the discharge was also found when they discovered her body. It was found on her face coming out of her nose.
Now, the mucus in the truck, here's a problem is, remember that medical examiner that said that she had been raped, she'd been sodomized, she'd been strangled, all these things. Well, he signed an affidavit and he's come back 180 and said, everything I said was BS and you got to forget about it. So we're left with, okay, we know the DNA is solid. That's about it. Other medical examiners and people that have analyzed the case will say that she wasn't strangled, but she might have been suffocated in other ways. They look at the sodomy allegation and they say there is zero proof of this, zero evidence of it. They pretty much tear everything this medical examiner said apart, and he, of course, has recanted and said no. So this is a problem because we're not too sure if the mucus in the truck is part of this discharge or if she was struggling, what have you. But it's a good assumption. I would say at least that. And we can at least know that she was face down somewhere, I'm assuming the truck, for many hours and then moved to this side of the road, you know, placed there face up. Well, if we're going with the theory that Rodney has done this, so Rodney meets her somewhere, gets in her truck, murders her immediately, and then goes and dumps the truck, and then gets his car and goes back to the body and moves it. What, I mean, this is getting a little shaky here because he's going back to the body. Like, that's not a good idea. This is probably not what somebody would do. But we don't know. We're not in a murderer's shoes. We don't know what their idea would be, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense that he would go back and move the body because we have to account for this lividity. We have to account for some of these medical symptoms of rigor mortis.
Looking for a fun and relaxing way to unwind? Download Two Dots, the free puzzle game with over 5,000 unique levels. Connect dots to solve colorful puzzles and collect rewards. With different gameplay modes like scavenger hunt and arcade, there's always a new adventure. Don't want a game alone? Connect and engage with the larger Two Dots community to match up your skills. If you're looking for the perfect game to help you relax but also keep you engaged, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS.
And you could surmise that maybe she had left the apartment much earlier. If her fiance is asleep on the couch, maybe she snuck out to meet up with Rodney and then things went south. But that doesn't really work because Carol Stites testified, as we said, that she heard someone leave at 3 a.m. and go down the stairs. So, I mean, that's exactly the time that she would leave every day. So that fits. A lot of people have made a lot out of certain aspects of this case. A lot of this really doesn't matter. Whether Stacy Stites had a relationship with Rodney was real or not, I don't even care now, because it's shown that in the past he has been violent towards people that he was in a relationship with. So that doesn't really matter to me. I think when you look at this case, you need to look at it logically. You need to try and fit the pieces together so that it makes sense. And as we were just talking about, it doesn't really fit if she left at 3 a.m. The timeline just gets worse from there to pin this against Rodney Reed. Because of the lividity, because of the discharge, it just does not fit. But scary enough, what does fit, if you want to talk about how long it takes for a body to go through these changes, what does fit is if her fiancé, Jimmy Vanell, murdered her sometime that evening around 11 or midnight and then stashed her in the truck and then waited until later, perhaps at 3. Perhaps he left at 3 a.m. to go take her and then he somehow had to make it back.
Well, we have a beer can with two different officers' DNA on it. Now, yeah, they went and checked the mileage on all the police cars, all the squad cars. But did they go and check Ed and Hall? Could have driven their own personal cars there, and one of them could have driven Jimmy back. This isn't rocket science. Rodney could have had somebody that he was with too, but that's not really Rodney's MO. And Jimmy does have the support of his fellow officers.
So again, the changes that her body experienced really only seem to make sense if she was murdered much earlier than the prosecution alleges. Now, I know when I was looking over this case, one of the things that really struck me early on was the truck, Jimmy Finnell's truck that she had been using, was abandoned at this Bastrop High School, which just happens to be 0.6 miles from where Rodney Reed lived. So it makes sense that if he did the crime, that he would have dumped the truck off within walking distance of his home so he could just go home.
Yeah. And anyone says, well, they didn't find his fingerprints. Well, it's possible he didn't leave any usable fingerprints. And, well, maybe if they'd actually examined that truck longer and kept it as evidence, maybe they would have found something. But it seemed like a pretty rushed job. The whole thing seems pretty rushed at this point. So I'm not even trying to say that Rodney might have left fingerprints there. I'm saying that we don't know because they really botched the investigation.
So at this point, Justin and I are basically saying that it makes the most sense that Jimmy Finnell should have been the one facing the heat.
Yeah, he should have been the prime suspect the entire time, and they should have kept the truck. They should have searched the apartment. How did this beer can get on? Like this, the beer can just throws me. But when I was first reading about this, the fresh DNA deposited on Stacy was really throwing me until the medical examiner recanted everything. So therefore, I'm like, oh, okay, well now Rodney's statement of they had sex a day before actually works out. And it's not as damning as when I first thought. Something as simple as The underwear was wet. It was fresh. Makes all the difference in the world in my mind.
But we still have their past hanging over their heads. So Rodney Reed, history of rape, right?
Yeah.
And Jimmy Finnell, not really, right? But wait.
Wait.
Wait. This is years later, but Jimmy Finnell would be accused, then tried and convicted of raping a woman.
Yeah. While on duty, he takes a woman into custody and at gunpoint rapes her. Jimmy is still sitting behind bars today for that.
Yeah, they say the earliest he can be released is in 2018. And this wasn't the only allegation either.
He had multiple allegations. So, we're looking at two men with really checkered pasts, both involved with Stacy. As we said, the defense attorneys didn't allow any of the witnesses to verify if Rodney had a relationship with Stacy prior to this to testify. Meanwhile, the prosecution will point out that one of the witnesses had made a statement that Stacy and Rodney had smoked crack together. Well, they did a toxicology on Stacy and they pulled hair samples, which go back many months, and they were not able to find any drugs in her system. So they're questioning, well, they're all Rodney's family, Rodney's friends, except for a cousin on Stacy's side. They're bringing up their credibility, especially in this one statement of them smoking crack together. That doesn't really sound like Stacy's MO either. But if she's hanging out with Rodney, Rodney was originally brought in for cocaine charges. So yeah, she's hanging out with a guy that does and sells cocaine. Rodney will make statements that Stacy was able to obtain marijuana from a guy named Ed. Well, there is an Ed involved in this. Well, we have Officer Samella. His first name's Ed, the guy that took his life. There's another dot if you want to go there. We also had another officer who thought Jimmy was guilty of this crime, and he would end up being murdered by a Mexican national who will be deported for the murder of this police officer. That seems weird to me. When a police officer is murdered, normally we go for blood, especially in Texas, but instead they deport this guy. And this officer happened to be doing a side investigation, allegedly, against Jimmy, another dot in the conspiracy. When you read some of the websites about this case, you will find a conspiracy and cover-up narrative. And I'll admit, it's actually pretty easy to make. I don't know if I buy into all of it, going all the way up to, you know, prosecution, defense attorneys, and judges. But Rodney did have a lot of his appeals denied, whereas I felt he was justified in his appeal of inefficient counsel, other DNA. I'm thinking he's got an argument here. Why are they denying him? But as we know, that's what they do. It's an uphill battle once you're found guilty.
Yeah, they wanted additional items tested. They wanted items retested, I'm sure. But when it comes down to it, they're not making any headway in court. And as it stands, it seems like Rodney Reed is staying put on Texas death row.
I feel Rodney has a case to get a new trial. And I hope that the DNA testing is done that he's requiring. And a lot of that would be testing Stacy's clothing, because it appeared that it was removed and then put back on. So whether it be the bra straps or her pants, there's a lot of things that they could look into. But again, we no longer have the truck and the apartment. Well, that was never locked down. So Rodney's defense team is having to work with what they have. I think there's enough question here that he should be heard and possibly get a new trial. I think that his original defense was completely inadequate. whether or not you want to call that a strategy, I think calling in alibi witnesses and character witnesses or anyone to testify that you did have a prior relationship with this woman is a good thing. And they chose not to do anything. He had very little defense at all. They didn't even bring in their own medical professional to counter the medical examiner's findings, which would then in turn all be thrown out. So you see the problems here. This case is a mess, and we have the Innocence Project, the Free Rodney group that are fighting for this man. And if he's not guilty, then it's very possible that there was a small conspiracy by Jimmy and possibly a fellow officer or two to cover this up. But I'm having a hard time with the whole investigation and trying to piece together what we have to make my own conclusion.
There are very passionate people on both sides of this argument about whether or not Rodney Reed is indeed guilty of the murder of Stacy Stites. For those of you who have been trying to follow along, this case is so complicated, but you can really boil it down to what we call the evidence. And on Reed's side, I think you have a timeline that's very difficult to get past, which is if she truly left the house or if she truly left her apartment at 3 a.m, then how do you explain the lividity? It's just so difficult to get past. On the other hand, you have the DNA results. When the courts look back over this stuff, the assistant attorney general and the assistant district attorney in Bastrop County, Texas, was all too happy to point out all of the DNA findings that they found Rodney Reed's DNA in her, and they found it on her, and they also found it on her clothing. And so this is just very difficult for them to get past as prosecutors, as people seeking justice for a victim, that all of this DNA would be present a day and a half after the suspect says he was with her. This is not an easy case. I will say that I agree they should do it all over again. They should have another trial. And if they are that confident that Rodney Reed is where he belongs, then they can prove it again. Because I truly believe, I think that he did not have proper counsel in the beginning. And it's just now that he's gotten a decent lawyer to defend him. And if we're going to put someone to death, let's just get it right.
Yeah, that's my whole problem here is we have a man that's sitting on death row with one of the shakiest investigations I've ever seen. It's just not right. If we're going to put somebody to death, if we're going to punish somebody, sentence them for a crime, let's make sure that it's a crime they actually committed. He might not be a good guy. He might have done a lot of other bad things, but if we don't get the person that's responsible, that means there's somebody else walking around free. Now that somebody else might be sitting behind bars too, but it's a tough one to consider here.
They owe it to Stacy Stites and her family to get this right. And just because people can point at Jimmy Fennell and say, look at his past, look how awful a person he is. Or they can point at Rodney Reed and say, look at all the people that he's harmed. That's not good enough. We need to look at this case in isolation and say, what do we know here? What are the facts of this case? What is the real timeline? And unfortunately, I don't think that they can answer all of those questions, but let's let the lawyers argue it out in court one more time and hopefully they'll get it right.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't let the defense see the truck the first time. They didn't give a lot of this DNA evidence to the defense, or the defense did nothing with it. There's so many problems we need to redo here. And I'm kind of saddened that most of his appeals have been shot down.
Carol Stites, along with other family members of Stacy's, maintained that she loved Jimmy Fennell, that she was very much looking forward to her wedding, that she would work her butt off to try and save money to pay for this wedding, they said it would be the first proper wedding that they could think of in their family. And when they had to bury Stacy, they buried her in her wedding dress. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.